There we have it. Ho, ho, ho. See, when you have the new guy running the board, sometimes things go awry. Imagine with me for a moment, if you will. We're just going to take a moment. We're going to go on a little trip here. It's 3 a.m., and you're lying in bed, and you're awake. It's happening again. You stare at the clock, 3 a.m. Drum in your fingers, work's coming in a couple hours. And you know you're not going to get much sleep if you don't get to sleep now. It's kind of stressing you out. But for whatever reason, you can't seem to fall asleep. It's 3:15. It's 4 a.m. You're still awake. Well, is this scenario familiar to you? Because if it is, you're in good company. It may be comforting to know that there are some 70 million Americans who suffer from sleep problems, and nearly 60% of those are chronic sufferers of sleep problems, maybe just like you. So 35% of U.S. adults fail to get at least 7 hours of sleep per night, and 60% of high schoolers fail to get the recommended 8 to 10 hours of sleep per night. And in the U.S. alone, there is an estimated $60 billion worth of lost productivity in the U.S. So, welcome to the show tonight. This is Health Matters. I am Dr. Patrick Lavo, and tonight we're going to be talking about, you may have guessed it, sleep. And with me in the studio, I have someone incredibly qualified to answer your burning questions, and who will provide us with a healthy outlook on sleep and give us some good tidbits and maybe even a recommendation for a good mattress brand, Dr. Oleg Chernyshev. Dr. Oleg, welcome.
Yes, thank you for having me, Doctor. Well, I am sure that there are a lot of questions from audience today related to sleep and what you were introducing and discussing. Earlier it was a classical description of insomnia. Insomnia as a symptom, very common, a lot of people experience that or report that symptom. It's, as you said, about 70 million people would have some dissatisfaction with sleep.
So, and that's what percentage of the country is that? There's like 350 million people in the country. I mean, it's a huge portion of the population that's struggling with sleep.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. It's a big number of people who suffer at night, and the most important thing would happen in the morning after the type of experience. Usually they wake up tired, fatigued, depressed, with bad mood, snappy, and imagine what happens after they jump in the car and drive to work. So we have high risk population here to have car accident.
But you know, that sounds like me almost every morning. I just have to tell you. Now, let's not jump the gun. You're being too modest here. I have to speak of your qualifications. So Dr. Oleg Chernyshev is a neurologist and somnologist at LSU. So a somnologist, that's a cool title. Director of Sleep Medicine Program and the Sleep Medicine Fellowship at LSU Health Science Center. He's also the director of the Stroke Program, and he was recently named the Kenneth M. Viste Patient Advocate of the Year by the American Association of Neurology. So, Doctor, first of all, congratulations on being named the patient advocate.
Oh, thank you so much.
Let me give you the number then. So if you want to call in, talk to the patient advocate, the sleep medicine program director, 1-800-552-8502. We are here to answer all of your burning sleep questions because, again, 70 million. That means at least one of you in the audience tonight, of the five people out there that are going to call in, one of you is struggling with sleep in your life. So first of all, what exactly is sleep medicine, Dr. Chernyshev?
Well, sleep medicine is a field of medicine which studies sleep, normal sleep, and also pathology, sleep pathology. In other words, everything is abnormal related to state of sleep. And sleep is actually a normal state of consciousness. As mm-hmm. as you all know, that's part of our consciousness. We have a lot of cool stuff happening in the brain during sleep, especially. It matters for those who are really under big stress. If you have if you have uninterrupted sleep, and what we usually say in my practice, we say to our patients, what we want like you to remember, you need to have straight hours of sleep, straight A, we call it.
Straight eight. Okay.
Yeah.
So, and that
straight
refers to
eight.
The 8 hours eight. Of sleep that you need.
Yes. And why you need it, you need to help your brain restore its function overnight, consume energy, and that energy everybody needs to be creative next day and be able to function creatively and able to perform all type of jobs we usually do during daytime.
Sure. Yeah. So straight eight. So now you've said that. So 8 hours, I think we all have this understanding of, you know, you think about, oh, I didn't get my 8 hours last night. So what exactly is insomnia in terms of that compared to like the straight eight, the 8 hours of sleep?
Well, insomnia is, first of all, you need to distinguish between insomnia as symptom and insomnia as a primary diagnosis, primary disorder. Everybody who says, I have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep,
sure,
technically has insomnia symptom.
Wow, okay.
But
they don't necessarily have insomnia.
That's exactly what it is here. That's a main understanding of this sleep issue. Because now we need to understand from where this symptom of insomnia coming. Is it related to a specific lifestyle issue which affects sleep hygiene? And we'll say to our patient that sleep hygiene, it's something which relates to good sleep habits. And if we know that sleep hygiene is disturbed by environmental factors like, let's say, alcohol, smoking is a very bad thing, coffee or caffeinated beverages, it all can disturb sleep, right? And
sure,
cause symptoms of insomnia. Let's say we drink coffee late night or alcohol, that's what will happen. Somebody will have difficulty falling asleep or will get
so
up.
So you can have a symptom of insomnia just from transient effects in your life. Now, that's an interesting thing that you
brought up. Lifestyle issues.
You brought up an interesting thing with alcohol because I feel like everyone thinks alcohol makes you sleepy.
Well, that's partially true. And initially, it makes somebody to feel very sleepy. But when it goes away from the human body, usually in 4 hours, patients wake up very much awake and have difficulty falling asleep.
Now, that brings us back to where we'll be discussing, we'll having urologists on the line in a few weeks from now. So just, you know.
Yes.
That's a slight promo there.
Okay. But let me tell you something. So in other words, insomnia symptom can come from environmental factors, so lifestyle factors. Also, it can be related to medical conditions people have. For example, somebody has heart conditions, let's say CHF, congestive heart failure. Mm-hmm. Somebody has COPD.
Sure.
Somebody has epilepsy. So that can also cause symptoms of insomnia.
Sure.
Other thing, we need to remember that there are several primary sleep disorders which can also come along and manifest itself as insomnia. For example, obstructive sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome, narcolepsy.
And we're going to get into all those in a little bit.
Yes, we will chat about that, I'm sure. And what I want you to remember that if you cannot get your straight 8 hours for some reason and you feel like you're falling asleep, difficulty falling asleep, having difficulty falling asleep, or you are waking up at night for unknown reason or for specific reason, it's a good idea to ask consultation of your sleep doctor and find out what's going on.
So, I guess, tell me then, so we're talking a little bit about, so these things cause insomnia, but what does it mean to have insomnia then? And not just these lifestyle effects, but actually to be an insomniac. What would that look like? What do you have to have?
Well, there are two types of insomnia, to make it simple. Number one is primary insomnia and secondary insomnia. Primary insomnia comes in a situation we call it psychophysiological insomnia, when somebody would have problem with falling asleep and staying asleep because the place where falling asleep and staying asleep, it's not exactly the place of comfort. It's
sure.
place of discomfort when there is some sort of struggle, and that's why it's important to remember that if we have arguments in our bedroom, if we have some sort of business activities in our bedroom, let's say we pay bills, let's say we do video gaming, we watch even TV in our bedroom, all of that makes our brain get excited, and then this activity will be coupled with specific room. or the place where you or someone is in, and we call that place bedroom. So in such situation, when mm-hmm. person enters bedroom, gets excited instead sure. of getting relaxed and
fall asleep.
Because
they associate it with yeah. these exciting, stimulating
exactly,
things.
Exactly, exactly.
Sure.
So in other words, we're coming back to our sleep hygiene, which is an array of good sleep habits, which uh-huh. help us to promote sleep and help us to get our straight 8. And I'm going to repeat many, many times, straight 8, because you guys know that 8 hours of consolidated sleep, that's what your brain needs to recover.
Right.
And
we're handing out bumper stickers up here. So if you drive by, straight yes. 8 will be on a bumper sticker.
Yes, I love that idea. So to continue, we'll say that it's important to make bedroom as comfortable as possible, number one. Mm-hmm. And don't have exciting activities, especially involving some sort of arguments
sure.
or huge exposure to light. And even remove TV out of bedroom. So make it environment very comfortable and make your brain associate that place with
right.
rest and relaxation.
Sure. Now, you said that you're not allowed to have any exciting activities in your bedroom, which we may have to get to later because we're going to have a sex therapist on in a few weeks, so we'll probably want to get to that. Now, I do have a caller.
Oh, sex
here.
And sleep is
good. Oh, so that's
it's okay. Good. It's
okay.
Good. It's okay.
So
that's recommended by everyone.
So
it's
some exciting activities in the bedroom is okay.
Well, this type of excitement is okay.
Okay. I've got a caller here from Cotton Valley on the line. You are on with Dr. Chernyshev.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. My name is Oedipus, and I'm calling regarding, I'm concerned about my mother. She has had a lot of trouble sleeping for many years, and she takes Ambien every single night. And she's been doing this for quite some time, and I'm just worried that she's going to become demented, that she's going to have memory problems and things like that. I heard that it's not good to take every night when you're older. And I had heard about this other medicine called Rosarum, and I was wondering if there was any, you know, if that's would be a better drug for her to take, or if there are some drugs, some sleep aids that are better than others if someone needs a prescription sleep aid.
Well, this is very, very important issue you're raising up. First of all, the medications you mentioned are hypnotic medications, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And those medications should be administered by qualified physician who understand and watch circumstances that needs to be administered. Of course, over the broadcasting program, it's very difficult to give you straight advice here. I would say that probably good idea for us to see your mother and have very good survey and review of other medications, other conditions going on in her situation.
Sure.
And I would say that, of course, if a physician prescribed those medications, you need to really understand why you're taking it. Because, yes, in senior population, they can cause a lot of side effects and potentially can cause memory problems and problems with executive function. So that's why careful arrangement
sure.
will really help in this situation.
I think that's probably a good point. Thank you so much, Oedipus, who's having some problems with his mother. We're going to just take a moment to think about that. But I think it's important to note that what you said is I think you hear about this a lot, you know, oh, I've having trouble with my sleep, and I had some friend who had some Ambien, he had some prescription medications, so I just took a couple. And I think that you've pointed out that that's not a great idea, because these medications do have some significant side effects, and they can have some real issues. So it's important that if you're going to take those things, if you do have some sort of problem with sleep, then you do need to seek a qualified physician who can talk to you about that versus just self-medicating on these kinds of things.
You're right, doctor, and what I would like to say that hypnotics are very strong medications. The FDA approved those medications only for specific condition,
mm-hmm.
and they need to be given under care of physician, and a specifically qualified physician. Ideally, it should be sleep medicine physician. So needs to be the take-home message here should be, if such medication is given to me, I need to completely read instructions, understand why I'm taking it. And if they are not working, it's probably a good idea to hold on it and seek professional care.
Awesome, awesome. Well, we've got all sorts of people on the lines here, so if you have any questions for Dr. Chernyshev, obviously we're talking about sleep tonight, and he is a specialist in all things sleep. I know we all have questions about that. Call in at 1-800-552-8502. I have Deborah from Lufkin on the phone. Deborah, you are on with Dr. Chernyshev.
Thank you. I have a problem with sleep period. I've never slept a long period of time in my life, but the last 5 years I've been taking care of my mother, and she is 24/7, so my day is basically 168 hours arbitrarily, and I just start the clock over. I sleep with in the room with her, either if she's sleeping in the bed, then I sleep on the couch or try to sleep. But I usually don't sleep more than 15 minutes at a time. I can't afford to take any kind of... Several doctors have wanted me to take sleep-type medications, but I can't afford to do that because if I have to get her up, she's an amputee, and I have to stand her, then I can't afford to be off balance at all. So I don't take any kind of sleep medications. I did try to take melatonin, but it really didn't cause me to do anything but just sort of maybe relax a little bit. But my sleep is not on a regular basis. I try to get a little bit of sleep if there is someone watching my mom, because she has seizures and she is stroke and AFib and all this kind of stuff, and I give her medications 7 times a day, which is every three and a half hours. So is there something that I can do to just make myself fall asleep if there's somebody there? Because it's really hard to do when you're not, it's not a routine. And I don't know, I'm 64, and I'm really getting to the where this is really affecting me.
It's a great question. So
yes, it's
so
a very complex
trouble,
question.
Trouble falling asleep because you don't have a long period of time and can't really afford to, not afford to, but you know, can't allow yourself to take prescription sleep aid. So
right.
Is there anything she can do? What do you think?
Well, I see the situation as such that, of course, there is some sort of caregiver burning syndrome here, because we have somebody who needs to provide care for a loved one, and the loved one obviously needs care, and during that time, when you're trying to fall asleep, demand for care comes. So what we would call that condition is environmental sleep disorder, which means that there is external stimuli which can disrupt mm-hmm. the sleep, and it can come from obviously from human being, or let's say somebody have construction outside the door or have loud neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So in this situation, obviously, there are several things to manage it. Of course, number one, I would say ideally, we need to find somebody to help you out, at least give you some time to rest, okay? Some time to rest. Ideally, it should be about 8 hours, okay? Then you can go take shower and sleep straight, and that's what actually ideally need to happen. Meanwhile, I would recommend you the things which we usually do as physicians when we're on service. We have strategic napping.
Mm-hmm.
Strategic napping. So we take short naps, knowing that, yes, I'm taking a nap maybe for 30 minutes.
Right.
But combination of those naps actually should be about 8 hours per 24-hour period. Okay? It's a little bit tougher, and it's still your brain will be demanding the rest, because we have to have 8 hours of sleep. It's sleep is a very rigid process. It's like... I would say sometimes to my patients, it's like a software you're running in your brain,
sure.
Which has to clean your brain from all sorts of viruses, all sorts of malware, and all sorts of toxins to accommodate your activity next day. So in other words, it that way it refreshes your brain and gives you energy. Okay, so that's why we need to make sure that 8 hours of sleep are respected one way or other. But strategic napping, I think it would be advisable to you. I would not advise you to take any strong hypnotics, because if your mother needs your help, you might not wake up.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. So ideally here, probably it's good to work with social services, help out, find the little help for at least 8 hours.
So
sleep.
Maybe the big takeaway there is just, first of all, Deborah, thank you so much for calling in. And kudos to you for being an incredible daughter. I feel like that's something everyone strives to have a child that is that wonderful. So kudos to you. But I think the thing maybe we took away from that is there is no substitute for the straight eight. You can't say, well, you know, you're going to make up time for it. You know, you sleep 30 minutes, you know, what, 16
Absolutely.
Times a day. Yes. That's 8 hours, right? Well, no, it's not. That's ultimately inadequate. You need to find. So if you can't make that happen in your current routine, then your current routine needs to change. You can't keep it up forever.
That's correct. And why it's correct, because from research, from science, we know that folks who experience chronic sleep deprivation, that's what exactly happening with our listener here, they start having high risk of depression, anxiety, mm-hmm. metabolic syndrome, diabetes, development of those conditions, because brain releases different neurotransmitters at certain times of the day, and if its rest is disrupted, specifically during sleep time, those release of those hormones compromised and can cause and long term those consequences.
Right, and you know, you can't. This is one of those things that you can't be a good caregiver if you're not taking care of yourself.
Absolutely.
So it's important, at least in Deborah's case, to make sure that you are maintaining yourself, because you know, struggling with depression, anxiety, you know, developing these other illnesses that come as a result of lack of sleep would make you ultimately inadequate to take care of your mother in the long run. So it's important to take care of yourself now. Now, I've actually got another caller for you. We've got all kind of people. So I've got Maggie from Missouri. Now that must mean that you're listening on the internet.
Missouri. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Well, welcome to the show. You're on with Dr. Chernyshev.
Yes, welcome.
Hi, yes. I am 6 months pregnant, and I have no problem falling asleep. But then I wake up at midnight every night, and I can't go back to sleep. And I don't want to take any medicines. I know there are some that are safe during pregnancy, but I don't want to take them. The only thing that seems to work is if I eat a piece of buttered toast, but then I step on the scale, and the doctor tells me, stop. So what else can I be doing?
Buttered toast as a sleep aid.
Well,
for at least 2 months this has been going on. It doesn't matter how much I don't nap during the day, because I'm trying to fix this. But
okay. May I ask you a question? Is it your first child?
Second.
Okay. Did you have any similar issues with first one?
No, not really. Not this bad. It was maybe one night every couple weeks, but now it's every night.
Okay. Well, sleep and pregnancy, it's actually a very hot topic in sleep medicine right now. We are finding out that women's health specifically affected during pregnancy. And several sleep conditions can come during pregnancy as a transient phenomenon. So they will all resolve after delivery of the baby, obviously. And of course, one of them is obstructive sleep apnea, snoring, and in some cases, restless leg syndrome is coming as well. And I would recommend you, I just don't want to collect a lot of private information over the broadcasting, but just want to recommend you to, good idea to get a sleep study done and potentially check for those things related to snoring, obstructive sleep apnea, restless leg syndrome. Because those things in different trimesters, it's very common in pregnancy. And that may be what wakes you up. Okay.
Well, Maggie, thank you so much for calling in. And we hope, first of all, good luck with the second kid. Adding another one is always a lot of work. So good luck there. We're excited for you. Pointing out that, you know, these changes that you go through, so you're having trouble sleeping, and we sometimes just think, oh, well, I'm awake, I'm not tired, but really it could be related to these other problems you're saying, obstructive sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome, that maybe you're not actually attributing to your lack of sleep but is causing some of these problems.
That's correct. And that's probably not only United States, in the whole world, there is no organized systematic program for screening for those conditions. In other words, we only know about them when patients come to us right now. So we, of course, working really hard to establish that system in our community, then we can, we go to the community events and we screen people mm-hmm. for presence of obstructive sleep apnea or RLS or other signs of insomnia, go to churches, go to different events. And mainly, if you specifically touching an obstructive sleep apnea, obviously it comes with snoring, and snoring in our culture is considered to be kind of funny thing. But we need to remember that's a funny killer. Okay, we need to know that if snoring can be part of a condition called obstructive sleep apnea, when upper airway repetitively collapses during sleep, obstructing it and causing deprivation of oxygen and airflow coming to the lungs and as a consequence of that coming to the heart and brain and potentially putting somebody who has this condition to the high risk of stroke, heart attack, sure. heart failure, atrial fibrillation, atrial flutter, and other, even intracranial aneurysm recently discovered. So it's a very funny killer. And our job is to identify such disease and condition and treat it because it's treatable.
Sure it is. So now, I've got a little break here for us for a moment. So we're talking about sleep, right? We're talking about sleep with Dr. Chernyshev. So obviously, this is my take on wait, don't tell me.
Okay.
This is not my job.
Okay.
So if you're a master of sleep, then you must also be a master of mattresses, because as we all know, you're nothing without a good mattress. So I have a quiz question here for you. Four options. One of them is true. The other three I just made up. You have to pick which one is the real answer. So we all know mattresses are comfortable. And honestly, they're probably the most important piece of furniture that you own. But how well do you really know the mattress? So this is your test, Dr. Chernyshev. So which of these is true? Number one, the mattress industry is technically a monopoly, with all four major mattress production houses being under the direct supervision of their parent company, Halliburton. Two, mattresses in their current format were created by Highland shepherds who slept in bags of wool and on the bags of wool that they would shear from sheep, and ultimately they started selling these bags as a sleeping apparatus, which was the origin of the modern-day mattress. Number three, by U.S. law, all mattresses must be able to withstand an open flame for 30 seconds before catching fire. Or number four, innerspring mattresses sink like rocks, but newer foam mattresses can float. And in the case of the sinking SS Regalia, a small ship that went down in the Atlantic in 2014, saved the lives of dozens of passengers as they served as life rafts.
Well, I wish the last one would be the answer, but, you know, I think number two is an answer for your quiz.
You think number two? All right. Well, actually, that is something I just made up. So the actual truth is, this is crazy, by U.S. law, all mattresses must be able to withstand an open flame for a full 30 seconds before they catch on fire.
Wow.
This is not something that you out there should try to test right now, but I confess I was very curious. As I was reading this, I was eyeing my mattress and a lighter, and I was like, we could put this to the test. Like,
well, I wish they would be asking for them to float. That would be easy for our flooding time, you know.
We may or may not have a question about waterbeds coming up, so we'll get to the floating beds. But all right, so that, I feel like we've got a lot of things to talk about. You brought up some good stuff. We talked about insomnia. We talked about this idea of, you know, having trouble staying asleep. We didn't really even get to get into it, but I think that something that's interesting is most people consider insomnia to be treated primarily with these hypnotics. You know, you think I've got insomnia, I probably need something like Ambien. I probably need some prescription medication. But the first line therapy is actually oftentimes cognitive behavioral therapy.
Well, let me a little bit rewind back. You're absolutely right. If it is a disorder of insomnia, mm-hmm. yes, here you need to come and find the best treatment for your patient. And then it might include hypnotic and it might include cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
What I just want to warn people and tell them, because I'm kind of preaching about it all the time to my resident students and colleagues, that if it's symptom of insomnia, then please do not use these hypnotics for this type of case, because mm-hmm. if it could be something can endanger the patient and mislead the treatment and make things worse. So, but for primary for insomnia diagnosis, mm-hmm. yes, it's actually a very, very much complex therapy.
Mm-hmm.
So we use several techniques, for example, for cognitive behavioral therapy. We teach our patients to control and understand their emotions during that time when they are entering the room, and we call it stimulus control. So, in other words, we are trying to replace that perception of the bedroom as a fighting place, mm-hmm. place of struggle, with pleasant.
Do you find that a relaxing. Lot of people have this idea of the bedroom as a place of struggle? I'm just interested in your patient population.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You would be surprised. And
Is that
know
because
what?
A lot of couples have fights in their bedroom?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly.
So move the fight to the kitchen.
It should be going to special fighting room, I would say.
Okay.
Because this is what you need. Or anxiety room, okay?
That's so what you some can do with the extra mattresses, right? You just line the walls of
well,
the fighting room.
Well, yes, you can do a lot of things if you're creative, okay? So I usually advise my patients, number one, of course, we need to remember basic sleep hygiene, uh-huh. right? You need to establish sleep routine. You need to make sure that the place of your sleep is a place of sanctuary. It's only for sleep and sex, like you said earlier, and complete relaxation. It should be nothing which will interrupt the process of relaxation. Mm-hmm. Of course, some people like to watch a little bit TV. I tell them then, if you cannot fall asleep while TV, let's put timer there. Let's put timer. You fall asleep and TV will turn off and it will not wake you up anymore.
Okay.
Put timer for 30 minutes or 60 minutes. After that, TV will cut itself off and you are sleeping and TV is not interrupting you. Ideally, needs to be out of room, and then all computers and all this video gaming, texting should be getting out of the room, and especially in kids and teenagers,
mm-hmm.
because we want teenagers to perform and do well on the tests. And what we hear from teachers and parents that they are sleepy in the classroom, and they're sleepy and they cannot perform, and their test results are bad, grades are going down. After coming to us, talking to us, things have changed. After just implementation of simple things, okay? Mm-hmm. So everybody should have fixed bedtime, get-up time, and it should be, as we talked earlier, straight 8 hours mm-hmm. for adults. For kids, I would say up to 12 hours, 8 to 12 hours, depending on the age of the kids. But main point is that kids should not be on adult schedule.
Okay.
Little brains need more sleep. We need to know that. So, or growing brains.
I was going to say, I have some people that I work with that maybe I should advocate more sleep for them, but I've always thought little brain, you know, maybe.
Well, it's a brain of children.
So
That's what I meant.
I can't
yes.
tell my coworkers that. All right.
Well.
Don't have your permission. That's
yeah,
fine.
Yes, yes, so yes.
Growing brains.
Growing brains.
Sleep. Okay.
Let's make it defined. So, in other words, it's all important. So, we talked about creating special bedroom environment. We mm-hmm. talked about number of hours which need to happen. And here we teach our patients about the ways to handle the stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
So all these disrupting forces should go out of bedroom and move to different place. And of course, it's a process of transitioning, because it takes a lot of time to have this cognitive psychological intervention to replace bad habit with good habit.
Right.
Okay. It sometimes takes and involves getting hypnotic at the early stages.
Okay.
Combine it with cognitive behavioral therapy initially, and transition after that to just cognitive behavioral therapy.
Okay.
That's pretty much like a nutshell the approaches to treatment and to management of this condition.
Sure. Now, I think I've heard this before, and I've talked to people about this before, and we actually talked about it on with a lifestyle physician the other day, discussing the idea of, you know, you brought up screens and the, you know, all the video games and the texting, and it's advocated oftentimes for an hour before bedtime that you shouldn't have the screen time. Have you found that something like that is an effective change with students, with kids who are having a hard time staying asleep or having a hard time staying awake during the day?
Yes. Well, we need to remember, exposure to light at any time, it's like drinking a cup of coffee,
mm-hmm.
okay? And depends, of course, on the number of pixels, amount of pixels you're exposed to. Our cell phones, even if they have so-called blue ray protection, they still stimulate brain.
Because mm-hmm. it's those blue lights that do
yes,
it.
Yes, yes, yes. And it delays the sleep onset. Delays sleep onset. So I would say that 4 hours prior to sleep onset time, we need to eliminate exposure to light, like bright light specifically, and cell phones specifically. So that's why I usually advise parents to ask their kids to check in and log in their phones and put them on charge, you know, in the box in the parents' room and pick them up in the morning.
Wow.
Yeah, that intervention works 100%.
Wow. I challenge you parents out there with multiple teenagers. Implement this tonight. That's a safe advice. That you've been challenged. So I think that's, you know, the light thing that we were talking about. We're going to talk about non-24 a little bit later, but I think that's kind of jumping the gun. So we've talked about this a little bit, and I think that's really interesting, and I think that a lot of people struggle with insomnia, and I think that we see that all the time. Speaking of which, if you do struggle with insomnia and you have questions for Dr. Chernyshev, 1-800-552-8502. He is the patient advocate. He is here. He's stuck here for another at least 23 minutes, so he can't leave. If you have a question that you want to ask, I mean, come on, when's the last time you got a neurologist in the room for 23 minutes without him rushing off? I mean, this is impressive. So we talked about 1-800-552-8502. So let's move on to sleep apnea. So sleep apnea is near and dear to my heart because I'm an ENT and we deal a lot with sleep apnea. We see a lot of people for, you know, this quote unquote sleep surgery, but kind of, you explained it a little bit, but tell me, snoring, the funny killer, I think you called it. What exactly is happening with sleep apnea? Why is snoring, like, explain it again. What is so bad about snoring? It's loud, it's obnoxious, it keeps everybody else awake, but why is it bad for the person who's doing it?
Well, obviously people not doing it on purpose. It just happens because physiologically when human beings fall asleep, collapsibility of upper airway increases.
Mm-hmm.
And when patients or people breathe under normal circumstances, airway collapses and cuts down airflow to the lungs, to the heart, to the brain. So in other words, oxygen is not coming to support the functions of the brain on time. And obviously, blood oxygen desaturations, frequent ones, will cause and put strain on the heart and on the brain.
Right.
Of course, first consequence would be frequent awakenings, mm-hmm. with gasping, snorting, with sometimes very bad dreaming, very dramatic dreaming. Some people sometimes jump out of bed, even on top of the snort. A loved one will get concerned and mm-hmm. say, "Okay, you're quitting breathing. I thought you died. I thought you're dead," and start waking them up with elbow. With elbow, we call it elbow sign. Well,
look for a bruise on their ribs.
That's correct. And it's actually very important to wake this person up, because if oxygen drops too low,
mm-hmm.
It might not wake up the person, and person can die in sleep. So why? Because it was oxygen pretty much deprivation.
Sure.
Luckily, our brain is set up in the way that we have to wake up and to take a breath. And that's what happens with these people. They're always surfacing in light sleep throughout the night and wake up in the morning tired, fatigued, sleep deprived, mm-hmm. bad mood, as I said earlier. It's actually not a big deal, some people can say. At the same time, this funny killer with putting strain on the heart and brain makes your heart and brain not only suffer from deprivation of oxygen, but also work 3 or 4 times harder. It's like somebody exercising in the a fitness center.
Mm-hmm.
And also it causes release of the adrenaline and other activating hormones,
mm-hmm.
Which help to burn energy very fast in the body. So when a person wakes up in the morning, all energy is gone.
Right.
And they're sleep deprived.
They've been working all night.
Yes, they were working all night. They were exhausted. And instead of assuming good rest, they were working and working and working.
Right. So now, this is bad, obviously. So this may be,
yes.
This is a warning out there to you if you have a loved one who snores and hasn't done anything about it. This is a good idea for, they may not know. Maybe they don't know they snore. They wake up, they're tired, they don't know why. They need to know because this is something that can be treated.
Yes, it can be treated and prevent somebody from having stroke, heart attack, heart failure. Also, atrial fibrillation, AV block, endocranial aneurysm. And other consequences,
right? Big bad
which, which can actually kill the person,
right?
In the long term,
I mean, snoring, obstructive sleep apnea, I think, is an independent risk factor for all cause mortality. I mean,
yes, for stroke for sure, and for acute coronary syndrome, which is heart attack, right? And for heart failure now,
right? So I mean, it seems like just a minor nuisance in the short term, but in the long term has pretty devastating consequences. So I guess, first of all, if you think you might have sleep apnea because you're like me and you wake up and you're cranky and you're tired, and that could just be residency talking, but I'm not sure. My wife has not told me that I snore, but I worry sometimes because I am always perpetually in a bad mood when I wake up. But if I think that I've got sleep apnea, what do I do? What's the first step?
Well, first step, obviously, to find a doctor who will help you to make a diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea, because making diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea involves having sleep study.
Okay, so and sleep study.
Yeah, it could be either portable sleep study. We can do it at home, at your home. We'll get you equipment and you'll get it at home.
So like a bunch of people come to your house and film you and watch you sleep? How does that go?
Well, it's not as dramatic as you think, but what we usually do, we can give equipment to patient, and patient will preset it and teach patient how to put it on. And patient comes home, put it on, and sleeps in his normal environment. And next day brings equipment back to us, and we download information and make diagnosis that way. There is also a traditional way which we're using, and I think it's also a good way to have in laboratory sleep study. And why I like that way, because we can diagnose patients at the same night and also start treatment. In the middle of night, if we see there are obstructions of upper airway and person is struggling, it's with oxygen drops, blood oxygen desaturations. In the middle of night, after monitoring for 3 hours, if we see such bad situation, sometimes those can be associated with heart cardiac arrhythmias, irregular heartbeats, and all sorts of pathology, jumps in blood pressure, we initiate treatment. So we offer patients breathing machine, and we titrate carefully that pressure, which will help to open upper airway and prevent collapse of upper airway. After that, we give patient prescription, get breathing machine with certain pressure set.
So that's,
and of course, after that, we monitor patient and make sure that everything is done well.
So when you say breathing machine, you're talking about CPAP, right?
Yes, CPAP machine. There are BiPAP machines. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of other machines, adaptive servo-ventilation. There are about 9 types of machines we can offer right now, and it depends on the pathology we see.
It's come a long way. I feel like it used to be much more basic.
Well, we start therapy with a basic level if condition requires more advanced therapy. Now it's available and it's much quiet devices and masks are more comfortable and better tolerated as well. So in other words, the expertise, sleep medicine expertise, is very important here. It's very important to find the right physician and get the right care and advice.
Well, I think that that's... So the important thing is, if you think you have sleep apnea, the first step is obviously get the sleep study. And then the next step is consideration for a breathing machine or that CPAP or that BiPAP, which obviously just stands for continuous versus, you know, bimodal.
Yes, positive airway pressure. Positive airway pressure. But, you know, in simple terms, it's actually a breathing machine.
It's a breathing
machine. Set up at certain pressure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's interesting. So can any doctor order a sleep study, or do you have to go to a sleep physician? I mean, who does?
A sleep physician does that.
Okay, so you actually perform the test?
Yes, yes. Physician needs to be specifically certified to evaluate patient with sleep disorder and also capable of interpreting study results, and it comes usually with a training, special training,
sure.
1 year training. And as a director of sleep medicine fellowship program, I would say that we, in fact, we have very much the oldest center in Louisiana. It was the number one center in Louisiana, established in 1983.
Do you make your fellows stay up and watch people sleep? Because then I'm concerned about their straight eight. I mean, I just want to say we need to be consistent here.
In training, obviously they have opportunity to come and participate in setting up patients, see how sleep study is done, mm-hmm. and do interpretation. And of course, the main important thing that after that they can go home and sleep for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now I'll let y'all know that in residency, yes. when you have the quote opportunity end quote to do something, you better be there. All right, so it's time for part two of our mattress quiz. First of all, I'll give you the number, 1-800-552-8502. Dr. Chernyshev just gave me quite a look, but I'm doing it anyways. I can't be stopped. So we're having, obviously, you're a master of sleep and stroke and all of the things we're talking about today, but are you a master of the mattress? So, waterbeds. Because who doesn't want to sleep on a mattress with the impending threat of explosion with complete ruination of everything that you own? Well, here's some true things about waterbeds, and here's some false things about waterbeds, and you got to tell me which one is right. So, number one, waterbeds were originally invented by Wham-O, the company famous for water balloon production. In their efforts to create the world's largest water balloon, they actually discovered it was sort of comfortable to lie down on, and ultimately began production of the early waterbeds in the 1980s. Two, waterbeds were originally invented by the Romans, which was a little bit not really a waterbed. The rich were rocked to sleep in warm water and then taken to a standard bed afterwards. Number three, waterbeds were invented by the Greeks, who used small contained tubs aboard ships to sleep on to counteract the movements of waves while they were sailing. Or number four, waterbeds were originally invented by Herman S. Grinfort, who was trying to come up with a way to counteract the significant death toll from high-rise buildings and building fires in the early Industrial Revolution.
Well, I like the last one.
You like the last one. I liked the last one, too, especially because I made it up. It was one of my favorites. No, actually, waterbeds, the original theoretical waterbed, was the Romans, who the rich were rocked to sleep in warm water and then carried to a normal bed. Now, I didn't confirm this with any scientific journals. This was a quick Google who made the waterbed. So, this is...
That's okay.
Maybe
We're not making fake news here.
Maybe Herman S. Grinfort was also involved. Now, actually, we have got a caller for you. So I've got Renita from Shreveport on the line. Hold on. Let me get her. Renita, you are on the air with Dr. Chernyshev.
Hi. My name is Renita, and I just have a question about the sleep. I do have a sleep study scheduled really soon. My question is, if I'm having headaches in the middle of the night, could that have something to do with my snoring? And I have also been having some irregular heartbeat, and I've been going back and forth to the doctor, so they did schedule a sleep study when I mentioned that I was snoring. But the headaches are what I'm concerned about. Do you think that has something to do with my snoring?
Well, if you look at the International Headache Classification, they have several headaches described associated with sleep. And yes, there is a headache described, and that headache is associated with obstructive sleep apnea specifically. And reason, they call them sometimes nocturnal headache or headaches on awakening. They usually happen because during obstructive sleep apnea, there's a big shift in metathoracic pressure, which causes potentially changes in intracranial pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And intracranial pressure increases on the top of the apneic episode, causing patient wake up with headache. So it's potentially possible in the situation you're describing. Of course, in terms of heartbeats and palpitations also can be related to that, because remember that when upper airway is closing up, and again there is oxygen deprivation, intermittent oxygen deprivation, and CO2 buildup in the blood, it can cause this cardiovascular and cerebrovascular phenomenon.
Okay, I was just wondering, I'll be sure and mention that. My sleep study is actually next Wednesday.
Well,
so
good.
I will be sure to mention that when I go.
Okay.
Yeah, and good luck with that. We really hope you're able to find a solution to your problem. I know that.
Yes.
That, you know, I think it's interesting that so many people call in with different issues that are related to sleep, and you don't really think about sleep as being the culprit or having a good night of sleep as being the cure necessarily for these things. But it's almost so simple, but at the same time can be so elusive for people who have problems with sleep.
Well, uninterrupted sleep is actually very much necessary for the brain function. And I usually say to specifically when I talk to disobedient teenagers whom parents trying to put in sleep and, mm-hmm. and they're struggling, they don't want to do it, I usually explain it this way. I say to them, remember that your brain is a supercomputer.
Mm-hmm.
Supercomputer. It's hardware. Okay.
Right.
And yes, and what you holding in your hand is a microcomputer. And usually I'm talking about these smart devices and smartphones, etc. So imagine if you don't run antivirus app or program in that computer,
mm-hmm.
it will, you know, die, right? And imagine that if you run in such program, it takes some time to run such program to clean
sure.
that computer, right? So same thing happens with brain. So you press the button, sleep starts, and when sleep runs, the software, it cleans the brain from all sorts of things, including toxins and, again, so-called viruses and quotation marks and malware. If it runs for appropriate time, which is about 8 hours, and for kids maybe up to 12 hours, and then uninterrupted way, so nothing uninterrupted sleep, abnormal or, conditions or environmental conditions, it will provide the full rest for the brain, and next day brain will be in full function to perform wake activities,
mm-hmm.
right? Whatever we want to do. And that's what I usually explain. For some reason, it works, because usually at the end, I'm asking them, who is stronger, your super brain or that little computer in your hand? And, you know, answer is always my super brain. So they start listening that way. Teenagers start listening to us. And I think it's very important for parents to insist on night rest for their kids, and also learn to monitor their sleep time, because it helps really and supports performance of kids in at school.
Right, straight eight.
Yes, straight eight.
Although and eight to
straight
12.
Straight eight goes to straight A. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. See,
yes,
that's
yes,
the next
yes.
bumper sticker. See,
well,
people, we're gonna have merch up here.
Yes,
straight
yes,
eight for
yes,
straight
yes,
A's.
Yes.
Or straight 10 or straight 12. That seems nice. Now, what about this? So this is maybe a personal question. What about those people who are just fine off 4 hours of sleep? What's going on with them? I've got a boss that's like that. Dr. Nathan's out there somewhere. I don't know that she sleeps more than 3 hours a night, and she is superwoman.
All right, let me tell you. If you look at the International Classification of Sleep Disorders, 3rd edition, you will find out that there are normal variants of the sleep, and there are so-called short sleepers. These people, it's not a lot of them. At the same time, this group of people, they just need about 4 hours or maybe 5 hours of sleep, so they don't need to have 8 hours of sleep. It's one of those conditions which right now explored by genetics, and there are some publications started coming out. It's actually very interesting why these brains don't require a lot of sleep. Also, we have group of normal variant of people who have so-called long sleepers. They need up to 14 hours of sleep to get rest. And if you don't provide it for such patient or for such person, it's completely uninterrupted. They just need to sleep that amount of time to feel good. So it's interesting phenomenon, actually, why exactly we need that amount of specific amount of sleep. So I think that's what happened to one of your colleagues, doctor.
Wow. Well, I'm jealous. I want to say that, like, all the great people, if you look throughout history, like, I want to say there's random inventors and all these people have all been, like, 3 or 4 hours of sleep a night kind of people, and I'm jealous. Because if I don't get straight eight, I am grumpy. And I have a lot of people who can attest to that, that it's just ugly. Now, we're running low on time here, so I guess we'll just say some quick stuff. You know, we think about sleep apnea. We think about maybe overweight adults. We think about obesity. But what about kids? Can kids get sleep apnea?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Kids very much... in high risk, and I would like to say to our parents and teachers, if you see kid not performing well in school and kid is snoring any age, please bring patient to the doctor, because there are many reasons for kid to snore. Abnormal reasons, and one of them is big adenoids and tonsils. Doctor, you're probably familiar with that because...
Intimately, yes.
Yes, because this is your profession, to cut those growths out. And that's actually... it happens because if adenoids or tonsils increase in size, we call it tonsillar hypertrophy, it's relatively... takes big space in small upper area with kids. Mm-hmm. And it start causing those symptoms, and it can be absolutely be cured, and this is a very good news. After taking having surgery, it can be cured in 80% of time, pretty much.
Probably one of the quickest cures for sleep apnea, actually.
Yes.
In all the population of sleep apnea sufferers. And I think it's interesting, a lot of times the way that sleep apnea in children manifests is not tired, it's hyperactive.
Exactly. You're touching exactly the point which we need to make, we have 3 minutes left. But what is important, that if you notice again, or teachers tell the parent, okay, your kid is not paying attention in class, running around crazy, very hyperactive, and cannot listen, cannot understand what's going on, then it's probably a good idea to check for sleep deprivation for such kids. And, mm-hmm. and one of those things would be either having a short amount of total sleep time, which needs to be extended to appropriate age, right? Maybe 8 or 10 hours of sleep, depending on age, or need to be checked for snoring and for presence of adenoids and tonsils.
Also, a thing that people don't realize, I think, when kids are having trouble sleeping, a lot of times they'll fight sleep. So if you've got a kid that's staying up late, that you put in their room and they stay up for 2 or 3 hours reading, wandering around, and they just won't go to sleep. It doesn't matter. You put them in at 9 and they're awake till midnight. A lot of times kids who are having very interrupted sleep and very disturbed sleep will... not go to sleep. They'll almost choose to avoid it because the experience of sleep is relatively unpleasant.
Yeah. They struggle during sleep, and they don't feel rested. And some kids actually will report really nightmares coming through this, because when, let's say, with obstructive sleep apnea, with uncontrolled obstructive sleep apnea, we see kids waking up many, many times and transitioning between sleep and wake very fast, it causes the dreaming, very unpleasant dreaming. And that's why they're sometimes afraid to fall asleep. That's correct.
So I think an interesting point that we've got there. Now, Dr. Chernyshev, I am sorry to say that we are pretty much out of time. Thank you so much for being on with us tonight. Thank you for imparting some wisdom about sleep and about sleep issues. And I mean, there's so much more to cover. We didn't get into narcolepsy. We didn't get into sleep-wake rhythm disorders.
Well, maybe part 2. We can do part 2.
That's
right.
We're gonna have to do a part 2. And so, Dr. Chernyshev, thank you so much for being on. First of all, I also want to say there's a caller on the line. Stick around after the show.
We will get you
on personally with Dr. Chernyshev just to answer your question very quickly. So, Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Views expressed on Health Matters may not necessarily express those of Red River Radio, LSUS, or staff. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran. Phone assistance has been provided this evening by Wally Dirtlitz, Sheila Lawrence, and Al Villarreal. Production of Health Matters is made possible in part by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Please join us next Thursday for Health Matters. I am Dr. Patrick Glavo, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.